You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Charisse Perlina Weston. Charisse, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Charisse, we're talking about your show, of course, Jack Shaiman Gallery, this May, and Squeeze, and I'm really looking forward to this. So to begin with, I want to go through process and a lot that's happening in this exciting show, but the title is very enigmatic to me. Miss May, Squeeze, what is that a reference to?
So one of the things that I was thinking about in relationship to this work was méconnaissance or misrecognition. And so essentially I'm taking those prefixes, Miss and May, as the starting part of the title. And so a lot of the, I guess, the kind of formal process that I'm using is thinking about pressure and squeezing and kind of tying it to the ways in which, I guess, different ideological processes squeeze subjects or, you know, us into certain positions within society. And so that's kind of what the title is coming out of in a nutshell.
And let's talk about those societal positions, because you're talking about your position as a woman, as a woman of color, right, in the context of our world today. Is that part of what we're talking about? Is that part of the social fabric that we're talking about here?
Yes, yeah. So, looking from my perspective as a Black woman, and thinking about the ways in which different systems of anti-Blackness essentially like reposition Black folks in very specific ways.
Can you give me an example of that? I'd really love to dive into this more. I want to, of course, talk about individual works, but can you give me an example of what you mean, repositioning in different ways? It sounds like a misreading, right? As a Black woman being misread, perhaps misunderstood, but it sounds more than that, right? You're talking about repositioning.
So one of the reasons why I started to think about méconnaissance is I'm just really interested in this kind of process wherein our desire makes us pursue a certain kind of like coherence or relationship in society, but oftentimes what happens is that what we're actually pursuing is not coherence at all. It's actually a kind of like disordered or distortion of what we're seeing, if that makes sense. And so I kind of started to think about that in relationship to the ways in which Black folks we have to kind of deal with this with hyper visibility, essentially, that like, I guess, functions in a lot of ways to kind of narrow the scope of what Black people or Blackness can be. And
that makes sense. And I mean, there's a lot to of course discuss there, which I'd like to do now. But I also, in relation to this, want to talk about the press release, which had a kind of poetic text from yourself that begins with, "I have stopped watching the news." This seems to, you know, refer to a number of things that you're talking about now, but in part, it's about that relationship with the world that is hard to define, right? What it means to, you know, be away from social media, be away from the news, and yet. You know, struggle with what that means to kind of turn something off. You know, are we less engaged? But there's much more to that poetic text to me, because this is about something that you're struggling with, right? Something that you're haunted by. To mention one of the words in there, but again, this is poetic, so it's not like it's a narrative that I totally get, but it is. It sounds like it's about struggling with how you're receiving information and how you're communicating. Is that close to what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think what I'm also thinking about, especially in relationship to social media, is it's not just receiving the information, it's also how that information repositions us, I guess. Because one of the lines I wrote was essentially talking about this idea of being submerged in essentially all of this content that is telling me how I should be showing up online, I guess, and also kind of coaxing me into a different kind of fantasy of myself in relationship to all of this information. So this kind of like complicated push and pull of like receiving and then feeling the need to like, I guess perform a certain kind of news or a certain kind of like, I don't know what the word is. I guess perform in a certain way in relationship to the world that we're living in.
Yeah, that makes complete sense to me, because that's part of what social media does for all of us, and it is very difficult. And of course, but as a Black woman, it means something else, right? How you, as I'm reading what you're saying, it's also a different, yet another paradigm for how potentially you should present yourself to the world.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes. Yeah. Because we have to essentially navigate, you know, the different stereotypes and like issues around respectability politics or whatever that come in, like, essentially are always in tandem with being Black. And one of the things I've been thinking about a lot in my work is the ways in which these kind of very narrow, social frameworks for Blackness essentially foreclose the complexity of Black life and Black culture. And in particular, I've been thinking about Black interior life as something that is always foreclosed in some way. And so a lot of the work that I've been doing is thinking about ways in which different methods of, for instance, like repetition, enfoldment, can create another kind of, I guess, a metaphorical space where the interior can be what it is, be as complex, be as opaque, without, you know, this pressure to kind of perform being seen, I guess.
Oh, that's so interesting and very clear, because there's the external pressure to perform, as you're saying, and as I understand it, with social media and more. But then there's something internal that's that's even more slippery, right? That and maybe also does have its own expectations as a Black woman of what that means, right? What can be revealed? How should it be revealed? And in what context? And that's the tension in this show, in part of the works we're going to talk about, that kind of, and just stop me if I'm going too far, but that kind of tension between the sort of interior experience that is even kind of more difficult to grasp, what is permitted, what's not permitted, as a Black person, as a Black woman, and then the exterior experience of how you're expected to perform or the evaluation of that.
Perform, and also, I mean, I guess I'm thinking, maybe I'm tying like the idea of performance and being seen, being made visible together, how you're supposed to literally, like, visually show up in space. And a lot of the way that I'm thinking about this is in relationship to ideology and interpolation in particular, and kind of, I'm kind of tying méconnaissance or misrecognition to interpolation, in the sense that we're all kind of hailed into a certain position in society, but that hailing can only happen through an ideological misrecognition happens, because we're not necessarily in our interior, in our real life, we're not necessarily connected to the positions that we're put in. But it's through this kind of like this kind of like distortion that happens through, as a result of ideology, that we end up taking those positions on. That makes sense.
It does make sense, yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you're really articulate, and I love talking about this. So to jump into the show itself, the physical show, there's sculpture, photography, painting, and an installation. And the materials alone are really just fascinating to talk about and look at. But to jump right into one of them, there's a piece called Untitled, After the Squeeze and the Fuse and the Lift, which seems to, of course, relate to what we're talking about. And I love this for a number of reasons, but the materials are the ones that I was mentioning before, right? Photographic detail, decal, lead, and glass panels. Before we talk about perhaps the subject or even the narrative in this, how are these built? This is such unusual material, such fragile material. Lead is so, I think it's always moving, isn't it? Maybe kind of like glass,
yeah,
too. Can you tell me a little bit about, how these are built? Do they start with the drawing? And how is something like Untitled, After the Squeeze and the Fuse and the Lift built?
So a lot of this, when I first started working with glass, I did kind of like have these preliminary drawings that I used to make. But what I've realized in the time that I've been working with the material is that it's very resistant to a lot of things. And so it's actually a better approach to be more open to the possibilities of what can happen when it comes out of the kiln or when it's in the kiln. So usually I kind of start a series of work with a specific kind of formal framework. And in this case, I was thinking about squeezing, pressure. And so pretty much all of the sculptures in this show are fused sheets of glass. All of them have two different types of surveillance glass, one that's called Miropane, and then another that has this really funny name, Solar Cool Breeze, which I guess is supposed to be some kind of, I think it's a specific reference to its use in more residential spaces as a two-way mirror. And then this other architectural glass called Selexia.
I've never heard of any of those glasses, any of those materials. I mean, that sounds so cool. I mean, those all have, I guess, commercial or industrial applications that we typically don't see every day? Or do we see those?
Yeah.
We
probably see, or at least at one point saw, Selexia. It was actually one of, if I remember correctly, it was one of the first types of glass, architectural glass types, that was created in response to, I guess, the issue of essentially the ways that like a glass curtain of a building takes on so much heat. So it's kind of meant to be formulated in a way that kind of resisted some of that like heat transfer. Miropane is a specific brand of surveillance glass from, I believe it's Pilkington Glass. And it's marketed specifically as surveillance glass for like interrogation rooms and things like that. Like I said, Solar Cool Breeze kind of functions both as a surveillance glass, but also as essentially a material that you can use so that you can see outside of your home, but someone can't see inside, essentially. But the function still is this kind of idea of being able to, I guess, this kind of panoptic view of being able to see everything around you, but no one can see you.
Yeah, it's just fascinating materials. And so in this particular work, After the Squeeze and the Fuse and the Lift, on one hand, this is just a kind of amazing sort of material to look at, sculpture, the plinth that it's on, the piece itself, but it also, at least for me, has a kind of human sense. It feels like a body, and that may be just completely my reading into this, but there seems to be a kind of a gravitational effect on this. Is there a narrative to that? Am I really far off in thinking that way?
I think that there's maybe unconscious narrative. I've never really think I oftentimes get, I guess, a response from the work that is bodily, that when that folks feel a body in it or see a body in it, which I think is something that is, I guess, built into the work in a way that I haven't really figured out how to articulate yet. But this piece in particular has a kind of, somebody actually mentioned to me that it reminded them of an odalisque, which I had not thought about, but now I can't stop seeing it.
Exactly. Yeah, I had an association, something like that too, right? So odd how we do that, right? Because that's not your intention.
But I mean, it's something that I think I'm open to, because I think, I mean, it's also like the scale of the work itself or the materials that I'm working with, that they're, the sheets are usually like no bigger than like 5 or 6 feet, just because it has to be something that I can physically handle. So in and of itself, it becomes like a very specific human scale that I'm working with. And also my body is in the work in a very specific way. In some instances, I'm hot folding the glass.
So they're gestures, right? The hot folding the glass is a gesture, in a sense.
Yeah. And then even when I'm using slumping the material over, oftentimes it's this kind of high fire fiber blanket that I'm able to mold. It's that even that incorporates very specific gestures and movements that end up essentially imprinted onto the glass. So it does end up being bodily, even if I'm not necessarily intending it to be.
Well, that's so interesting. Thanks for sharing that with me. To talk about another work, move around a little bit, there's a painting, essentially, untitled Long Before the Squeeze, and this is on Hanamuel canvas. Man, is Hanamuel canvas? Hanamuel is a paper. Is the paper affixed to the canvas? Can you tell me a little bit about the process here? Because there's also epoxy, frit, glass. But I don't know what Hanamuel canvas is unless it's paper mounted on canvas.
So Hanamuel is the brand, and so they also make canvas rolls, printable canvas rolls. So it is a photographic print. It's actually two panels that are combined. All of these, this is part of an ongoing series of work that I've been doing where I take essentially documentation of past work, usually installations, and manipulate it and then print it onto canvas and then do further interventions on the surface of that canvas. So they kind of, essentially each process kind of pushes it further and further into abstraction. But this is also something that I'm really interested in. It's like this idea of reusing materials, how there's not a definite stop, I guess, to a specific art object, that it can always keep changing and transforming. So there's this kind of constant, I guess, cycle of my work kind of moving from the two-dimensional to the three-dimensional and back. This series is kind of a representation of that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, that kind of moving back and forth. And the approach to this then is quite different than the approach to what we were just talking about, the kind of almost bodily approach to after the squeeze and the fuse and the lift that you were talking about, right? This is a different way of your body interacting with this work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, it's definitely more, I guess it has a different cut, definitely a different kind of physicality. Some instances I am using broken glass from past work to literally etch into the surface of the canvas and sometimes literally break or tear it open. And then I'm also using other materials as like a, to add to the substrate, like frit, which is a type of glass. Now I'm just, yeah, using other materials as well. But like this kind of physical etching or cutting into the surface is very specific to the series of work.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's just fascinating. There's one other work I wanted to talk about, at least. It's called Three, Final Test of the Prefixial Squeeze. So before we talk about this one exactly, that title also seems very, very specific, right? We're always talking about the squeeze, but the prefixial squeeze. If there is something you can translate there, what does prefixial mean in that sense?
So one of the things I was thinking about with this series in relationship to Ms. and May was the kind of work that a prefix does on the on its root, and that it's all already doing, it's creating a kind of squeeze, a kind of like compression, altering of next part of the word, if that makes sense. And so that's what I'm thinking about in terms of like this prefixial squeeze is something that's happening, a squeeze that's happening even before, I guess, the object or subject of the squeeze has arrived. And yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so let's talk about this work itself, because this work, of course, is a different palette than the rest, is different than the two we've both talked about. I mean, different in terms of its presentation. We looked at something that was, I mean, these are all sculptures really, right? And paintings and involving a number of materials. This also is a honeymoon canvas, but now there's also oil stick. There's also frit in there that you were just talking about, but this feels like something entirely different. It feels almost like a wing to me, but it has a an unusual kind of sensuality to it. And I know that like a sense of desire was mentioned in the press release as well. So to talk about the content of this or the narrative, if there is one, I suppose you hear things from people like me who see things in it, bodies, shapes, and that's part of it. But in terms of how you're approaching this and what it means to you, is there a story here?
I think I wouldn't say that there's a specific story outside of like literally this kind of tension and pressure that's being put on the material. And also this is another example of what I was saying about this like process of my work kind of moving, having elements of the work move from two-dimensional to three-dimensional and then back. And so this is essentially me trying to push these kind of works on canvas back into a sculptural state through a literal squeezing of the material and holding it into place. And so, yeah, my body essentially, again, shows up in this work in a different way as well.
Thanks. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So before we go, I just want to ask you one more question. And hopefully the listeners can click through and see the show before it closes on December 20th, 2025. I want to ask you a little off topic what you're reading at the moment.
Right now, I just recently started reading this book, a collection of Suzanne Cesar's writing, The Great Camouflage, Writings of Dissent. And then I just recently started reading Subjects of Desire by Judith Butler. And then I'm also reading some fiction. One of my favorite movies is The Night of the Hunter, and so I started reading that book recently. But yeah, that's what I'm currently reading.
Thanks so much, Charisse. I want to thank you for talking with me today, for putting together this beautiful show. Thank you so much for your time, Charisse.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.